Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, gives you information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information, Please, at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. If we use your question, H.J. Heinz Company will send you $10 in more stamps, plus a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If we muff the question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information, Please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Information, Please's third stop in its bond-selling drive, not counting the little job we did a couple of weeks ago for the Red Cross. Tonight, we are broadcasting from Bushnell Memorial Hall in the colorful old city of Hartford, Connecticut. Tonight, 3,400 citizens of Hartford, including standees, are packing the hall. In this audience are 3,250 people who have purchased bonds in denominations of $50 to $5,000, making a total of $2,497,150. But, folks, hold on to your seats, because that isn't all. 150 seats in this auditorium have been allocated to representatives of business houses, and they have purchased bonds totaling $200,850,000. Ladies and gentlemen, we consider this a phenomenal achievement on the part of Hartford, and it's a fitting way to signalize the start today of the Treasury Department's $13 billion drive. And making this record even more extraordinary, we'd like you to note that the entire population of Hartford is only 166,267 people, but every one a good citizen. Now, tonight, our three regulars, Franklin P. Adams, Oscar Levant, and the New York Sun columnist, John Kieran, take special pride in welcoming as their colleague one of the most distinguished and far-sighted of living Americans, Mr. Wendell Willkie. I'm going to ask permission of our audience to stop for just a moment and step into my role of book reviewer, and quite frankly, to urge every American to read Mr. Willkie's new book, One World. Now, most of us haven't time for much reading. Make time, if you can, for One World. It's not a book. It's a searchlight. And now I have the privilege of presenting to our radio audience the Governor of Connecticut, the Honorable Ray Baldwin.
Mr. Fadiman and ladies and gentlemen, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome to Connecticut's capital city tonight the famous Information Please group, enhanced by that distinguished, greatly distinguished citizen, Wendell Willkie. And I'm sure we all feel intensely proud that this hall should be packed to its full capacity by Connecticut Yankees anxious to show their patriotism in this very, very practical way. The figures that have just been announced are just as staggering to me as they are to you. But being rather of a calm and cool people, we just take it and say that this is the traditional way that Connecticut does things. And I'd like to just add this one word for the people outside of Hartford in the state of Connecticut, and to tell them that today their state government has subscribed to $9,300,000 worth of these bonds, which is not included in the figures which have been given to you. And so, on with the drive for the sale of the bonds, and on with the show. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor. All right, gentlemen, we're all set. And here we go with a question from Gene Renwick of Bismarck, North Dakota. And here's the question. Who, on account of his size, was known as the Little Giant? Mr. Wilkie.
Stephen Arnold Douglas.
Stephen Arnold Douglas is right. What's his middle name?
Stephen Arnold Douglas.
Adam, did you know his middle name was Arnold?
I don't think it was Arnold.
Oh, yes, sir.
Well, that's a fine way to start the show.
I went to Stephen A. Douglas School.
You never knew his name was Arnold?
No.
Well, you just listen to Mr. Wilkie, which a lot of people are going to do. How about this one? Now, again, on account of his size, this fellow was known as Long Tom. This is, again, from our own American history. Long Tom? Mr. Levant?
Was that Lincoln's father?
Not that I know of, no.
Well, he was Tom, and he was long.
Yeah. No, I don't know how long he was. Mr. Wilkie, did it come back to you, Mr. Kieran?
I know a ball player, a pitcher, Long Tom Hughes. That's all I remember.
Thomas Jefferson was known as Long Tom.
Not to me. I never called him.
No.
Well,
I call him TJ.
His father may have been. His father was tall, but he was only 6'2".
How about this one? Who was known as Little Poison? Little Poison. Mr. Kieran.
That would be Lloyd Wainer, he's an outfielder still, I guess. He used to play with the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yes. Is there any particular reason why he was called?
Yes, he had a brother named Paul who was Big Poison.
He's still living. He's Big Poison.
Who, Big Poison's still living?
They're both living.
Both
the poison to poison call.
Yeah. Evening is getting kind of poisonal, Mr. Adams. How about this one from Olivia Burnett of Lafayette, Indiana? Again, get 2 out of 3. Who or what in literature made these sounds? The first sound is moaning and groaning. These are references to works of literature. Moaning and groaning.
Moaning
at
bar.
Mr. Wilkie?
Moaning at bar, that's what you're speaking.
Let there be no Tennyson. Moaning. There's moaning, all right, and Tennyson's crossing the bar. We haven't got any groaning.
They're the same.
Mr. Kieran.
Well, would that be the water coming down at Lodore?
It made all sorts of sounds, except moaning and groaning,
Didn't do that, huh?
The one I'm thinking of is the moaning and the groaning of the bells from Edgar Allan Poe's poem,
that's right,
the Bells. Is that right, Mr. Kieran?
That's right.
Right, Mr. Wilkie? Okay. How about this? That's one wrong. Now, what made the sounds jingle and jangle? Jingle and jangle, Mr. Levant.
Da 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 da, jingle jangle da da.
Spurs,
yeah, that's right. You didn't have any other idea, did you, Mr. Adams?
I thought he'd say boys.
Comes from Pittsburgh, not Brooklyn. How about sound and fury? What made sound and fury, Mr. Kieran?
That is Macbeth's famous speech. Life is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.
Right. Absolutely right. How about this one? Irvin S. Fullup of Union, New Jersey, sends this in. I think this is a very interesting question. Can you quote, not exactly, but just the substance, the first part of the Bill of Rights, the first commitment of the Atlantic Charter, and the first of Wilson's 14 points? Now, you don't have to take all of them, but Mr. Wilkie, would you give us start us off on it?
Well, the Bill of First provision of the Bill of Rights has to do with freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, right of assembly.
That's exactly right.
And let's see now, what was your next one?
The Atlantic Charter, the first commitment of the Atlantic Charter.
The first commitment of the Atlantic Charter is of Great Britain and the United States agreeing that they will not seek any territorial or other aggrandizement, isn't it?
Exactly right, Mr. Wilkie. You're doing swell. How about the 14 points? Late lament.
That's Wilson's 14 points?
Yes, unless you have some others up your sleeve.
Wasn't that where he talked about the open covenants openly arrived at?
That's exactly right, Mr. Wilkie. That's 3 out of 3.
And all of those worth remembering, Mr. Wilkie, do you think? Every one of them?
Particularly the day.
That's quite right. How about this one from Lina Grierson of Bridgeport, Connecticut, not far from where we are at the moment. What famous person do you associate with this maxim? Sir, I would rather be right than be president. Mr. Wilkie.
Henry Clay.
Yes. Would the rest of you gentlemen care to commit to this a little once in a while? Mr. Curran.
I only wanted to say...
He wasn't either of them.
Well, he took it out of my mouth.
Well, I don't think everyone got that, Mr. Curran. What were you going to say?
Same thing as Frank said.
What did you say, Mr.
He wasn't either.
He was neither.
Yeah, Henry Clay, yeah. Well, he was often right, but he never did get to be president. Mr. Wilkie, when did he make that remark? Do you know what point in his career, apropos of what? What speech? Well, it was in 1850, referring to the compromise.
Yeah, compromise.
Quite right. How about this one? The bigger they come, the harder they fall. Who said it? The bigger they come, the harder they fall. Mr. Adams.
A prize fighter.
Name him.
Precise
information we need, Mr. Adams.
I don't know. Might have been,
Corbett?
Jeffries.
No, it was neither Corbett nor Jeffries. Mr. Kidd?
Yes, Willard.
I would say it was Jack Dempsey, among others.
Well, before that, Mr. Curran.
Just the Cornishman, the freckled Cornishman, Bob Fitzsimmons.
That's the one. Yes, Bob Fitzsimmons, just before
he fought. Just before he fought Ed Dunkhorst, the human freight car, who fell.
When was this, Mr. Curran?
Around 1900 or perhaps a little earlier.
A little earlier than that, that's right. Now, who said, I'll tell the world? I'll tell the world. It's a famous phrase. Who said it first? I'll tell the world.
Oh, I think that's in Shakespeare.
That's right, Mr. Curran. Quite right. Mr. Wilkie, congratulations, Curran.
The play. I remember.
Waller Winchell in Shakespeare.
Yes, can you guess the play, Mr. Curran? You're generally very good at this. Just drag that play out from your subconscious.
No, it'd be a waste of time.
I don't know.
Measure for Measure. It's Isabella
for
Angelo.
That's right.
Remember it now? I'll tell the world what manner of man thou art.
Right.
Shakespeare said it first. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one from Miriam R. Goldberg of New York City? What American public figure of the past or the present would be a suitable guest on Information, Please, because of these varied talents and interests and activities? I'm going to name them. Now, this first chap was or is the following: a linguist, a botanist, a violinist, a dancer, interior decorator, architect, philosopher, ambassador, administrator. Mr. Wilkie.
Thomas Jefferson.
That's right, Mr. Wilkie. Quite right. What were you going to say, Mr. Levan?
I was going to say Thomas Jefferson.
Very good. Oscar, if Mr. Wilkie ever becomes president, you can be vice president.
Sounds like a good ticket.
Mr. Wilkie, I want you to give our other young men a chance once in a while. I'd like to hear from them.
Not if I'm vice president, I'll be glad to shut up.
You'll have to.
Well, that's something to look forward to. How about this one? Now, this chap, an American of the past or present, was a country school teacher, a compositor, a wanderer, an editor, a war correspondent, a government clerk, a nurse, a poet, and an essayist. Who was he? Mr. Adams.
Walt Whitman.
That's quite right. Yes, I had several hands on that. Mr. Wilkie and Mr. Levant. What were you going to say, Walt Whitman, Mr. Levant?
I was, because he was a nurse. That's what tipped
it off. That's right. That's what tipped it off to you.
So I'm in the cabinet.
And now, gentlemen, here is the third of our famous figures. This fellow was a teacher, a lawyer, a farmer, a traveler, an author, a business executive, and a soldier. Have 3 hands. Mr. Curran.
That would be Wendell Wilkie.
Is that right, Mr. Wilkie?
Well, Martin.
That's quite right. Yes, Mr. Wilkie entered World War I as a private, and how'd you come out, Mr. Wilkie?
Captain.
Lieutenant.
captain.
Wasn't it captain?
Well, yeah. I was the first lieutenant throughout the war. I was recommended for promotion at the end when they knew I was through.
You mean you kind of held your own, right?
And now we have a special question for our Heinz expert. Mr. Grauer, as one who knows his groceries, you ought to be able to tell us, where does the word grocer come from?
Well, so far as I can discover, the word grocer really means Mr. Big. About 500 years ago, when the name first came into use, it was given to spice dealers who bought in gross, meaning in large quantities. Now, most of us probably have just taken it for granted that grocery stores are as old as history. As a matter of fact, they're not. For centuries, every family had to rely on the food they and their neighbors raised, so you can pretty well imagine how dull the diet was. Of course, there were a few peddlers selling rare, expensive spices from the Orient. But it wasn't until around the year 1100 that spice shops appeared in London. These shopkeepers sold mostly spices and condiments, highly prized because they made meals more tempting, just as Heinz 57 varieties do today. Now there are around 500,000 grocers in the United States alone. And certainly nobody realizes better than you how important these men are to our communities. Under our wartime setup, their job is more vital than ever. So when you think of the grocer, you can rightfully think of the original meaning of the word big. He has a big job to do, and he's doing it in a big way.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer. And now we'll go on with a question from M.C. Burns of Wilkinsburg, Pennsylvania. This is a question about some famous Connecticut worthies. All these chaps came from Connecticut. And each of these men revolutionized something. The work of what Connecticut man revolutionized small arms? Small arms. Mr. Wilkie.
Remington, man.
Well, Remington certainly was very important. Mr.
Colt.
Mr. Samuel Colt. Yes. Invented the what? Do you know, Mr. Adams?
Colt revolver.
Yes, but a particular mechanism which revolutionized small arms. Mr. Curran, you might possibly know.
It repeated, didn't it?
Yeah, the revolving breech pistol.
Yeah,
quite
that's
right.
What a revolver means. It made it easy for domestic murders to...
Yes, I beg your pardon. You want to brood about that, Mr. Levant?
I'll brood about you.
Now, what Connecticut man revolutionized the study of the English language in America? Mr. Adams.
Noah Webster.
Noah Webster. Mr. Wilkie was about to say the same thing.
Noah Webster of Hartford.
Was he of Hartford? I don't think he was of
Hartford. Hartford and New Haven.
What did you say?
I think he was from Litchfield myself.
Litchfield. Well, we'll hear from Hartford and Litchfield in the morning. Now, what Connecticut man revolutionized the economy of the South? The economy of the South. Mr. Kieran.
Eli Whitten.
Yes, Mr. Wilkie.
Invented the
cotton gin. That's quite right. That gives us three Connecticut men out of three. How about this? From Mrs. H.A. Dinsmore of Washington, D.C. Complete these trios. I'll name the first two parts, and you give me the third part. The first, I'm afraid, is extremely easy, but worthwhile remembering. Life, liberty, and gentlemen...
Pursuit of
happiness. Very good. All right, that's just as a starter. By the way, Mr. Wilkie, who said that immortal phrase? Who said that? Who invented
that? That's the Declaration of Independence.
Yes, Tom Jefferson.
Thomas Jefferson.
How about Ruth, Musil, and Mr. Levant?
Coombs.
Who is this trio?
This was an outfield trio in the heyday of the Yanks when Miller Hubbins was manager.
Yes, quite right. They don't have any heydays anymore, Mr. Levant?
Not since as of last October.
Less hay, eh? How about, here's another trio. Eileen, Ching-Ling, and Eileen, Mr. Wilkie.
Those are the Song sisters.
Yes, and can you complete the trio by giving us the third? Eileen, Ching-Ling, and...
Ching-Ling is Madam Sun. Eileen is Madam Kung.
Quite right.
And Mei Ling is Madam Zhang Kai-shek.
100% right, Mr. Wilkie. That's very good. Mr. Wilkie, on your trip, did you meet all of the three famous three Sung sisters?
Yes, I've met them all, talked with them all.
And are the other two as charming as Madame Chang is?
They're different types of sisters. Madame Sun is a very serious-minded person,
yes,
much devoted to liberal causes, and Madame Kung is an extremely able person.
It's an astonishing family, isn't it, Mr. Wilkie?
Yes, it's a remarkable family. It's not alone charm, it's great ability.
Yes, indeed. How about this one? From Albert T. Lowe of New York. Who are the outlaws suggested or described in these compositions? So we're going to have some compositions played for us, and each of them should suggest an outlaw. Is that clear? Let's have the first. I had Mr. Levant's hand on note number two. Mr. Levant?
Till Eulenspiegel.
Till Eulenspiegel is right. By?
Yeah, by Richard Strauss, who was not born in Hartford, Connecticut.
All right, let's have the second outlaw.
Mr. Gilbert and Sullivan?
No, Mr. Adams. That was Mr. Adams.
Oh, my little John, that's Robin Hood.
Robin Hood is right, Mr. Adams. Very good. Who wrote the music?
Reginald de Colvin.
Very good. Yes, quite right. And now the third and last of the outlaws. Well, I have one, two, three hands, Mr. Kieran.
Mr. Villain?
That would be Wilhelm Tell.
Yes, William Tell, let's make it. He was a Swiss. Quite right. And who?
Oh, but not that isn't the villain.
Well, no,
well,
he was
I didn't say he was a villain. He was an outlaw.
An outlaw.
Yes, he was an outlaw, as Mr. Kieran reminds us. Who wrote the music, Mr. Kieran?
Rossini.
Rossini is right. Three outlaws out of three. Here's one from Roger Stanley of Boonville, Mississippi. And may I remind you, gentlemen, that it is part of your duty to miss occasionally so that we can send a bond or two to these poor folks to send in the question. How about this one? Can you complete the line that begins... Are you in this, Mr. Adams?
I'm missing on purpose.
Complete the line that begins with the words, how dear. How dear. Mr. Wilkie.
How dear to the to my heart are the scenes of my childhood.
Quite right.
That's a misquotation.
Well, if you're going to correct Mr. Wilkie, this is your first and last time.
Because how dear to this heart are the scenes of my childhood.
And what did Mr. Wilkie say?
How dear to my heart.
Either is
He's
correct.
He's nuts.
Either is correct.
I don't think you ought to crab on
No offense,
way,
old fellow.
I don't want to precipitate a political argument, Frank, but apparently either of those is right.
That's the point system song.
Now, here is another line that begins, how big?
What?
How big? How big, Mr. Adams?
How big was Alexander, Pa?
Never heard of it.
How big was Alexander, Pa, that people called him great?
Who wrote that?
I don't know, but it's in 100 recitations.
It is, really?
Yes, sir, and thousands of people in this hall have undoubtedly recited it at times.
Oh, that's just pressure politics.
All right, 10.
I bet that's true, Mr. Adams. I was thinking of the line in Edna Ferber's So Big, famous line, Mr. Levant.
Well, you say how big, and the kid says so big, and Warner Brothers made a big picture out of it.
How big is the baby, as Mr. Levant reminds us, so big. But I'm sure you're right, Mr. Adams, and you get 100% on that. How about this one? A line that begins, how far, how far?
How deep is the ocean?
Mr. Kieran.
How far, is that from Shakespeare, from Merchant of Venice?
Yeah, yes.
How that's far that little candle throws his beam, so shines a good deed in a naughty world. How's that, Kieran?
That's very good.
I was looking for a slight misquotation on that, Frank, but by gosh, you got it all right. That gives us 3 out of 3. Here's one from another Connecticut citizen, Robert Hale of Darien, Connecticut. A famous American once said, few die and none resign. By the way, does anyone know who did say that? Few die and none resign.
If you die?
No,
few.
Few. No. That's wishful thinking, Oscar.
I can dream, can't I?
Few. Few die. Mr. Adams.
I would guess that would be Benjamin Franklin.
That's a good guess, Mr. Wilkie.
I would guess that was Jefferson. I'm not sure.
Mr. Wilkie is right, Mr. Adams. He was right about that old open bucket, too. All right. Now, that isn't the question. The question is this. Can you name these people who, in effect, did resign? For example, can you name two crowned heads who abdicated voluntarily?
Yeah.
Abdicated voluntarily. This isn't so easy. Mr. Wilkie, start us off. Mr. Wilkie, name one of them.
Charles V.
Charles V. Famous.
Charles V, who was emperor, resigned and went to a monastery and made clocks thereafter. He's one of the most distinguished men of the Middle Ages, voluntarily abdicated.
If you think I'm going to contradict you, Mr. Wilkie, you're mistaken. Mr. Levin.
Well, besides the Duke of Windsor, there was the Queen Christina of Sweden who resigned and went to Rome and lived there for the remainder of her life. Greta Garbo did it in a picture, but it was historically true anyway.
You know, you learn a lot of history your way, Mr.
No, that was...
As a matter of fact, Oscar, I'm not
As
sure you're
wrong. As a matter of fact, you're wrong. I happen to be right. It has nothing to do with the picture.
No, I think it's quite possible the Queen...
It isn't possible.
That,
it's right. If you don't know it, tell me.
It may even be right. Mr. Wilkie.
I insist Charles V resigned in favor of Philip II.
I didn't say you were wrong either, Mr. Wilkie. I have never had a more quarrelsome group to deal with. Some of you children are going to be sent to the back of the class pretty soon. Mr. Curran?
I was only going to corroborate Mr. Wilkie and say that when the Emperor Charles V went into this convent, he tried to make five clocks keep time together, and he couldn't do it, so he said, what's use to trying to make people keep together when you can't even make five clocks run?
That's very discouraging.
John, you're exactly right.
I think that more familiar to some of our audience, including me, are Edward VIII, who abdicated voluntarily.
I remember.
Did he do that voluntarily?
Well, practically. Yeah.
Under the compulsion of love.
And Carol of Romania in 1925, although he did return in 1930. Now, can you name two Supreme Court justices who resigned? Mr. Wilkie.
Clark was one. Clark was... resigned about 10 years ago. He was appointed by Woodrow Wilson.
That may be one, Mr. Adams.
Hughes.
I think
Hughes is right, Mr. Levant. Mr. Adams?
I think... No, he didn't... Taft did not resign.
Well, we have an answer for Mr. Levant.
Hughes
and Mr. Wilson
are right.
Both right. John Jay and Jimmy Burns also resigned. How about two men who refused the Pulitzer Prize? Mr. Levant?
Mr. Saroyan and Sinclair Lewis.
Saroyan and Sinclair Lewis is exactly right. How about this one for Mrs. Grace McDermott of New York City? Can you classify these people for us? Who cannot be sued for slanderous remarks made on the scene of his duty? Mr. Curran?
Member of the House of Congress.
That's quite right, yes. Mr. Wilkie, that is correct. A wise provision, would you say?
Okay.
Would you say that was a wise provision?
Yes, it's subject to abuse, but nevertheless, if they would be subject to arrest, they couldn't debate at all many times.
And who cannot be restrained from disciplining a superior officer?
What?
Who cannot be restrained from disciplining a superior officer, Mr. Adams?
Probably a member of the military police.
That's quite right, Mr. Adams. And who cannot buy a bond for a ticket of admission to tonight's broadcast? Who cannot buy a bond for
admission? We couldn't buy any. We tried. people not in Hartford.
What did you say, Mr. Lant?
People out of this district.
And the Secretary of the Treasury and the Treasurer of the United States and the Solicitor of the Treasury may not do so. Now, at this point, may I say that the H.J. Hines Company has courteously surrendered its commercial time to the Treasury Department. But what is there to say about the buying of war bonds that this small city of Hartford has not already said? Our appeal to all of you is to beat Hartford, and Hartford won't mind. Now, the next city to have a chance at the record is Cleveland, which we'll visit on April 26th. In the meantime, everybody, buy bonds. And that's all we have time for. Thank you, Mr. Wilkie, for demonstrating another of your many talents this evening. Tonight, the H.J. Hines Company has paid out, I may say, no sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica and no dollars in war bonds and stamps. So, Mr. Wilkie, while you may stand very well with the people of this country in general, I think Mr. Morgenthau is disappointed in you. next week, Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams will be back in New York, and they will be joined by two guests, Ford Frick, president of the National League, and Grantland Rice, the veteran sports expert. Remember, send your questions and their answers to Information, Please, at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, Ben Grauer, our Hines reporter.
Until next week at this same time, the makers of the 57 varieties wish you good night and good health, and remind you that the Keystone label of Hines is your guarantee of highest quality in full-flavored foods and your assurance of maximum value for your precious food ration points. From Bushman Memorial Hall in Hartford, Connecticut. This is the National Broadcasting Company.